Hello and welcome to the Illinois Audio Reader. My name is Cedric Richardson, and in this part one of two, I'll be bringing you news from the Decatur Herald and Review. Federal dollars are set to help expand emergency food and shelter programs in Macon County. Macon County is set to receive $51,156 in federal funding that will be distributed to local agencies offering emergency food and shelter programs. Local qualifying agencies have until 5 p.m. Thursday, January 21st, to submit a letter of request to receive funding. Letters can be sent to Robin Murray at Catholic Charities, 247 West Prairie Avenue, or via email at murraydick@cc.dl.org. Agencies applying for the first time are asked to call 217-428-3458 extension 235 for an application. According to a statement on Tuesday, a board of representatives from Macon County Charities and Shelters determines how the funds are distributed. Emergency Food and Shelter National Board terms state agencies chosen to receive funds must be private voluntary nonprofits or units of government, be eligible to receive federal funds, have an accounting system, practice non-discrimination, and have demonstrated the capability to deliver emergency food and or shelter programs, and have a voluntary board if they are a private voluntary organization. Looking over to police news, a Decatur homeowner catches men breaking into his shed. Police said a Decatur homeowner who feared his shed was being burgled turned out to be right as he bumped into a man walking back from it carrying a $100 roll of roofing nails he had just stolen. A sworn affidavit from Decatur Police released Tuesday said the 58-year-old homeowner had been alerted by his wife about a strange truck parked in the driveway of a neighboring house he owns in the 400 block of South 22nd Street during the evening of December 10th. Three men had been seen acting suspiciously nearby. The homeowner had gone outside to confront the suspects, and that is where he met the man walking back carrying the roll of 720 nails, which had been inside the locked shed. The affidavit said the homeowner asked the man where his two accomplices were and was told they had both run off down an alley. As the homeowner went to check the alley, one man bolted out of the shed and fled, and he found the other hiding alongside the building. The homeowner told them to stay put, and the two remained there until police arrived, according to Officer Jacob Stewart, writing in the affidavit. Stewart said the men who stayed identified the third who ran off and later picked up the 31-year-old Decatur man out of a photo lineup. No updated information was available on charges against the two men who remained, but the 31-year-old, described by Stewart as organizing the crime, was found and arrested Sunday afternoon. He was booked on a preliminary charge of burglary. Stewart said that while the homeowner described only the nails had been stolen this time, his shed is missing hand and power tools valued at around $1,000. A check of Macon County jail records Tuesday showed the 31-year-old remained in custody with bail set at $33,000, meaning he must pay $3,300 to be released. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. A driver who crashed into Lake Decatur guardrail was trying to harm himself, police say. A sworn affidavit says that Decatur police have charged a Decatur man who smashed up a $24,000 car by deliberately crashing it into a guardrail around Lake Decatur was trying to harm himself. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police said the 48-year-old man had stolen the car at 3 a.m. Christmas Day and roared off southbound on Martin Luther King Drive. The man, while attempting to harm himself, intentionally drove the vehicle into the guardrail on the south side of the intersection with Martin Luther King and Lakeshore Drive, causing major damage to the vehicle and the guardrail, reported Officer Justin Ziller. The owner of the vehicle advised she had paid approximately $24,000 for the car. Ziller said the man's driver's license was revoked at the time of the crash. The affidavit did not list the man's injuries, but does say he was arrested at 4 a.m. December 26 at 1800 East Lakeshore Drive, the address of HSHS St. Mary's Hospital. He was booked on charges of possession of a stolen vehicle, criminal damage, and felony driving while revoked. A check of Macon County jail records Tuesday showed he was still in custody with a bail set at $25,000. Sewer work damaged a national gas line, causing a leak that led to an evacuation of a part of the west side of Mattoon Monday morning. About 75 people were evacuated from homes in about a 10-block area around Pine Avenue and 25th Street, Mattoon Fire Chief Jeff Hilligoss said. He said there were no injuries and residents were allowed to return to their homes late Monday morning. Hilligoss said the leak was reported just before 9 a.m. by City Public Works staff who were doing cleaning in a sewer and damaged an underground gas line running through it. The gas line was sealed by about 11:30 a.m., and crews with Ameren Illinois then went to work to replace the damaged section. The evacuated areas were the 2400, 2500, and 2600 blocks of Pine and Commercial Avenues, and the 2400 and 2500 blocks of Western and Prairie Avenues. It affected about 75 residences, said Hilligoss. Several streets in the area were also closed to traffic while the leak was addressed. Hilligoss said the Mattoon School District provided bus transportation to a temporary shelter at Mattoon's Burgess Osborne Auditorium, and five of the people evacuated relocated to there while the leak was being addressed. Ameren personnel were also on hand to assist residents in turning back on their gas service in locations where it was disconnected, Hilligoss also stated. He said Mattoon police also assisted in the response to the incident, and a Mitchell Jordan ambulance service responded to the scene on a standby basis. Heightened police patrols looking to curb a recent spate of gun violence in Decatur arrested an armed man Christmas Day who is listed in a criminal database as being a member of the notorious Black Peystone Nation gang, according to a sworn affidavit. The 25-year-old man had been spotted in a car around 8:48 p.m. in the 200 block of West Garfield Avenue that swerved around another vehicle and took off at a high rate of speed when it encountered a police squad car. Officers were operating a two-man proactive unit due to the recent uptick in gun violence in the city of Decatur, said Decatur Police Officer C. Zills in the affidavit. A 29-year-old woman riding as a passenger with the man is quoted as telling police he had cried out, "Oh, expletive," when he saw the police patrol before trying to accelerate away. Zills said officers had taken off after the vehicle and found it parked in a driveway in the 300 block of West Birchie Court. The man, who has a suspended license and is on parole, emerged from the vehicle saying the woman was driving, but she said he had been at the wheel. She said he had jumped into the back seat and ordered her into the driver's seat, the affidavit said. During an inventory search of the vehicle, DPD officers located a Taurus 9mm handgun under the driver's seat, said Zills. The handgun was wedged in between the seat cushion and the frame of the seat. The handgun contained one live round in the chamber with a magazine inserted in the magazine well. The magazine was loaded with 8 live rounds. Zills said running the man's name through Leeds Law Enforcement Automated Data System showed he was a gang member of the Black Pea Stones. He was also shown to have convictions for 2 offenses of aggravated battery along with criminal damage and 2 domestic battery convictions. The man was booked into the Macon County Jail on new preliminary charges of the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, 2 counts, and violation of parole. The Decatur Fire Department responded to a residential fire around 2 p.m. Sunday in the 400 block of South 16th Street. Crews arriving on the scene found smoke coming from the structure and a basement fire, according to a statement from the fire department. The department summoned additional fire companies and the first ladder truck ventilated the structure while the engine company advanced a hose line into the basement to attack the fire. Additional fire crews completed a search and determined all occupants were no longer in the structure. They also secured a water supply line from the closest hydrant. The fire caused minor smoke and fire damage. After the fire was brought under control, an overhaul was completed on the structure, the department said. One occupant was treated and taken to a local hospital for smoke inhalation. No fire department personnel were injured. Decatur Battalion Chief Tim May was in command and completed the investigation. The investigation determined the fire was caused by smoke and materials. If you can't beat 'em, join 'em. Isn't usually a job description for working at the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. But that approach is turning out well for Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Tammy Wagner, who just got hired by Macon County's State's Attorney Scott Reuter. Reuter, a Republican, defeated Wagner, his Democratic challenger, 29,742 votes to 18,567 in the November election. In most such races, that would have been it, and both parties would have gone their separate ways. But Reuter made no secret during the election that he admired Wagner as an attorney and a person of integrity, and he said he wanted her on his team. I've always said I have good respect for Tammy's abilities as a prosecutor, and we happen to need a good prosecutor, said Reuter, 61. So I hired her. Wagner said she had no qualms about putting her own high office ambitions aside to do a job she finds fulfilling for a fellow prosecutor she knows and trusts. But she says she also knows how unusual it is in the deeply divided political arena of this most turbulent and fractured year to have rivals who are willing to work together for the common good. You know, I can't recall ever seeing anything like this elsewhere, she said, but I really think, to be honest with you, that if you have 2 people who have respect for each other and appreciation for the work that needs to be done, then we need to see it happening more often. Wagner and Reuter's professional relationship goes back a long way. He said they both served as assistant state's attorneys in the Macon County office in the late 1990s. Also, she said he later worked for him when he was first elected state's attorney in 2000 before she left to work in private practice. Wagner has since served in a variety of prosecutorial jobs and most recently was working as an assistant state's attorney in both Moultrie and McLean counties. Her new job in Macon County will see her concentrating on illegal drugs cases, an area in which she has built up specialist expertise, said Reuter. Wagoner said she became interested in combating the evils of the illicit drug trade with insights gained from an uncle, a Decatur police officer, who was assigned to a multi-jurisdictional task force hunting dealers and trying to disrupt the supply of narcotics into the state. So I became interested in that prosecutorial work, and it's something I had pretty much done my entire career here. Wagner's arrival eases Reuter's search for competent help, but it doesn't end it, the state's attorney said. He explained he came into an office short of four assistant state's attorneys to bring it to the normal full complement of 17, and the office is also short a couple of support staff. Reuter said the budget he inherited allows for filling the positions, but exactly how many attorneys he hires may change depending on who he finds and how much he needs to pay to get them. He said hiring fewer but better qualified and more experienced people would be a better use of resources than just trying to fill a quota. It would be nice to have all four bodies, but given the amount of money I was given on the budget to hire people, I may have to sacrifice one position to pay folks enough to get them here. Forecasts are showing a slight chance of snow hitting central Illinois this afternoon through this evening, according to the National Weather Service in Lincoln. The Weather Service says a 20% chance of snow is possible after 3 p.m. A slight chance of snow predicted to fall before 11 p.m. is expected to accumulate less than half an inch. Temperatures are expected to remain above freezing with wind gusts reaching as high as 28 miles per hour toward the evening, according to the Lincoln Weather Service. Conditions starting afternoon are forecasted as rain and snow mixture, with little or no snow accumulation expected, according to the Weather Service. Weather officials are warning that freezing rain may impact travel conditions, especially north of Interstate 72. The hazardous weather is for portions of central, east central, and west central Illinois and could cause travel concerns into Thursday evening, according to the Weather Service. And now I bring you the obituaries for today. James R. Sams, 79, of Clinton, Illinois, passed away 9:30 a.m., December 25th, 2020, at his family home in Clinton, Illinois. There will be a service at a later date due to the COVID-19. Gravesite services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, January the 2nd, 2021, at Pleasant Valley Cemetery in Killeney, Illinois, with Pastor Darrell Howard officiating. Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton is in charge of arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Clinton United Methodist Church or the Cancer Care Center of Decatur, Illinois. James Robert Bob Marsh, 84, of Plano, Texas, formerly of Greenview, Illinois, and Decatur, Illinois, passed away Wednesday, December 23, 2020, at his residence, Sunrise Senior Living of Plano. Private family graveside services will be held Saturday, January 2nd, 2021. Arrangements are by Dawson and Wickoff North Chapel at 4020 North Water Street in Decatur. View the online obituaries and condolences and share memories at Dawson Wickoff Realestate.com. Georgia Ann Perry. Georgia Ann Perry died on December 25th, 2020, in the comfort of her home surrounded by family. Homegoing services to celebrate Ann's life will be held at 12 noon on Saturday, January 2nd, at Church of the Living God, CWFF, 400 South Franklin Street in Decatur, with visitation being held from 10 a.m. until 12 p.m. at the church on Saturday. Ann will be laid to rest at Greenwood Cemetery in Decatur. The family has entrusted Moran and Goble Funeral Home in Decatur with Ann's arrangements. Please view her obituary and share memories and condolences at moranandgoble.com. Betty Nell Whitman. Betty Nell Whitman, 98, of Galva, died on Sunday, December 27, 2020, at the home of her daughter in Hudson, Illinois. Private graveside services will be held at Galva Cemetery with Randy Swanson officiating at 11 a.m. Monday, January 4th, 2021. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Memorials may be directed to the Messiah Lutheran Church in Galva. Rux Funeral Home in Galva is in charge of arrangements. David G. Witz. David G. Witz died peacefully on Saturday, December 26, 2020. A private celebration of David's life will be held at Friends Creek Cemetery in Argenta, Illinois, with military honors. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangements. Memorials can be made to the National Kidney Foundation. Terry K. Young. Terry K. Young, 71, of Monticello, passed away at 6:35 p.m. December 22, 2020, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. A gathering in his memory will be planned at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, 501 St. Jude Place, Memphis, Tennessee, 38105, St. Philomena Catholic Church, 1301 North Market Street, Monticello, Illinois, 61856, or the Monticello Athletic Boosters, 1 Sage Drive, Monticello, Illinois, 61856. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.mackiewrightfuneralhome.com. And that is the completion of the obituaries for today. After 11 seasons leading the Raiders, Central A&M boys basketball coach Rob Smith resigned on Saturday. I'm thankful for the opportunity that was given to me by Central A&M and all the support we've had from the board, administration, parents, and staff over the years. It has been a great 11 years, Smith said in a statement. God has blessed me immensely. This was not an easy decision, but certainly was not a spur-of-the-moment decision. It is one that is made with a great deal of thought, discussion, and prayer with friends and family. There are a multitude of reasons and not one defining reason other than this timing feels right. Smith took over the program in the 2009-2010 season and led Central A&M to newfound heights. Over the past three seasons, the Raiders won three consecutive sectional titles and finished in third place at the Class 1A state tournament in the 2018-2019 season. Smith was the H&R Boys Basketball Coach of the Year in 2018 and 2019 and had a career record with Central A&M of 190 to 133. I am proud of what all our players have accomplished on and off the court and for what they will continue to accomplish on and off the court, Smith said. I have been so lucky and will cherish all the memories. I have had tremendous assistance in all of my years at Central A&M and am thankful for what they have done for the program as well. Most of all, I am thankful to God and my family. Smith cited concerns that Illinois high school basketball will not have a season in 2021 in his decision to resign. As for the timing, I don't see a path forward towards the season this year. I want to give the Central A&M administration ample time to find a suitable replacement, and I'm hopeful the great staff we have assembled will be able to stay together. I really hope that I am wrong for the kids' sake about there not being a season, and look forward to working with this great group of kids this season if provided that opportunity. I also look forward to continuing my work with the football program and in the classroom at Central A&M. The Raiders are defending Central Illinois Conference champions and won the Macon County Boys Basketball Tournament in 2019-2020. Singer Petula Clark expressed shock and disbelief that her 1964 hit Downtown was aired just minutes before a bomb detonated in Nashville on Christmas morning. I was told that the music in the background of that strange announcement was me singing Downtown. Of all the thousands of songs, why this one? Clark wrote on a Facebook post Tuesday. Clark said she loved Nashville and wished she could give everyone in the city a hug. The explosion took place in the heart of Nashville's historic downtown. The blast killed the bomber, injured several people, and damaged dozens of buildings. The RV blared a warning that a bomb would detonate in 15 minutes, then switched to a recording of Downtown before the blast. Millions of people all over the world had been uplifted by this joyful song, Clark wrote. Perhaps you can read something else into these words, depending on your state of mind. It is possible. New York City's prohibition past is detailed in a new book. Prohibition, New York City, Speakeasy Queen, Texas, Gwinin, Blind Pigs, Drag Balls, and More by David Rosen, 192 pages, $21.99. Last call. On January 17, 1920, prohibition became a sobering reality. Bars were padlocked, liquor stores shuttered, and thirsty Americans were sent home. Beer was banned, vodka, verboten, the teetotalers had finally won. The party was over, they proudly proclaimed. They didn't realize it was just the beginning. After a world war, a pandemic, and political upheaval at home and abroad, not everyone was ready to go onto the wagon. Plenty of people still wanted a stiff drink and a bit of fun. And those weren't hard to find for a price. The drunken 20s started roaring almost immediately, but they were loudest in Manhattan. David Rosen's Prohibition New York City, Speakeasy Queen, Texas Guinan, Blind Pigs, Drag Balls, and More has all the snazzy, jazzy details. By 1925, there were an estimated 100,000 illegal watering holes in New York City, ranging from upscale speakeasies to middle-class bars and cabarets to working-class blind pigs. Nightlife was reinvented.